Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. On our last episode, which you can check out at gluckradio.com, we had retired NYPD officer Russell Williams and Mike Byrne for a little bit join us. But with us today, we have a gentleman who spent his entire life serving this country via the military, the sheriff's department, and the corrections department until he retired in recent months. The corrections department is an entirely different world beyond ours. Life that takes place behind bars usually stays behind bars. But today, we're going to take a closer look at what actually goes on from a CO's perspective. What it takes to be a CO, corrections officer, as it actually tops the list on America's worst place to work, and the dynamics of the relationship between a CO and an inmate. Mr. James Nelson, thank you for all you've done. Welcome to Gluck Radio. James, welcome to Gluck Radio. It is really a pleasure to have you. Come all the way from Texas, so it is my pleasure.
Thank you.
James, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long did you serve? I know you had military service. I know you served with the police and corrections, which is what we're going to focus on today. But tell us how long you did for each one.
Well, for the military, I served for 20 years and then I retired. And that's when I picked up with the sheriff's department. Worked for the sheriff's department for almost 24 years in the as a detention officer in the jails. During that time, I went out for about 5 months on the streets as a deputy, and it just wasn't for me.
Right.
Being a deputy out there in the streets wasn't for me. I asked to go back to the jail, and they sent me back.
And so then when you went back to the jail, you went back as a correction officer?
Yes.
Not as a sheriff?
Not as a sheriff's deputy, no.
Okay, so when you see on TV what goes on in prisons,
yes.
Okay, how much of that is real? How much of that is not real? Tell me a little bit about what life is actually like for you as a correction officer and your fellow correction officers, and what life is like for prisoners.
For the most part, the day goes by very easily. Most of the prisoners are very well behaved, and they want to do their time, and they want to stay out of trouble. There is an element of people that think they're tough, and they try and take advantage of the prisoners. You also have your gang members. Now, we try to identify them and separate them and keep the gang members separated from the general population. And when we do identify them, they get locked down.
The lockdown means what?
That means they're in an individual cell.
Okay, and they don't come out?
They get out 1 hour out of the day.
Okay.
They come out, they can turn the TV channel, they can take their shower, they can clean up, but they get 1 hour out of their cell a day. And they're very manipulative, the gang members. The ones we don't find, they get in the general population, and they manipulate the inmates in there to listen to them and try and get them to convert to their gang. Yeah, so we have a very good gang intel service, and a lot of the times the inmates, there will always be one there or two that will identify them because they get tired of it.
Interestingly enough, so some actually don't want to identify themselves because they don't want to be locked down.
That's right.
Now, I know in lots of prisons or in all prisons, there are gangs.
Right.
Is it the same way that they're treated in terms of lockdown, or that's unique to Texas?
No, it depends on where I worked. It was a jail, and it was a maximum security jail, and we didn't want troubles with the gangs. We locked them down.
Right.
And we tried separating them at one time, putting three inmates in another area with other inmates. You know, they're all locked down.
Mm-hmm.
And they spread them around a little bit, hoping that we would get less trouble out of them, but they didn't like that. And eventually the management decided to put them all back together. That way we can control the one area instead of having them all split up through the and causing trouble in all the other areas.
Do the gangs purposely look to fight with one another in jail, or do they, in fact, just kind of stay away?
It depends which gang. Some gangs get along. They have a truce with each other. And others, they don't. And if they see a gang member, they'll take the first opportunity they can to get them, to get that gang member.
Right. So it doesn't matter who that person is, a different gang, they try to get him.
Yeah. And like I said, our gang intel has been very good. And they identify the different gangs. And when they're being transported to court or something like that, it's always on the paperwork which gang they're for. And they keep them separate or ship them out separately.
Now, what's the relationship with the correction officers and the inmates and the correction officers with each other? If a new one comes in, does it take a while before he earns his stripes and is respected by the existing correction officers?
Well, I was a floor control officer. As a floor control officer, my job was also to take care of my floor and also to train. I get assigned a rookie coming in. And my job was to train them for 6 months.
Right.
And so during that 6 months, it's my responsibility to teach them the ways in the jail, the policies and procedures, and how to handle the inmates. And about 4 months into that, we will switch, me and another floor control officer, we'll switch our trainees, our rookies, to evaluate how they're doing away from the their regular floor control officer. And in that way, we kind of get an idea of how well they're doing. So if my rookie goes to another floor control officer in his fourth month, and he'll give me his evaluation, says, hey, he's kind of lacking here, or he's very good, you know. So we get an idea. And then once he's 6 months up, we do a final evaluation, whether he's passing or not. And during that 6 months, he'll know whether he's not passing because we'll counsel him as to how well he's doing and what his weak and strong points are. So at the end, it's...
What does it take to be a correction officer, and what are the rights that inmates have? It said, I read an article just recently that it appears that the inmates have more rights than the officers. Okay, so tell me what rights the inmates have, what rights the officers have, and what really actually goes on if an inmate crosses the line or if an officer crosses the line.
Yeah.
A tough question.
The inmates have the general rights.
Which are what?
Oh, gosh. They have the right for... Gosh.
Not to be shot.
Yeah. No, they have their basic human rights, right? Food, their cleanliness, different things. Visits, not contact visits, by the way. It's just visits.
Are the foods the same for the inmates as they are for the officers, or different foods?
They are.
They are the same.
They are the same.
Okay.
Yeah. The food that we would eat was served by prisoners.
Okay.
They have a trustee selection system, and the trustees will work in the kitchen. And every time I ate, it was a prisoner that was serving me.
Okay. So their rights are the basic rights of food, clothing, shelter.
Yes.
What rights, obviously, don't they have? And what level of respect are they expected to and actually do act when it comes to other inmates and when it comes to officers?
They're supposed to act like anybody else acts. Not they're there for their time, do their time, wait for their court date.
It's okay. Take your time.
Yeah. they're just supposed to. They're supposed to
do they actually do that, or are they angry that they're in jail?
Some are angry, but the most of them realize they've did something wrong, or I don't know the word to put into it, but for the most part, they realize they've did something wrong or accused of doing something wrong.
Right.
Okay. And they kind of go with the flow of the system.
Now, there's a difference between a jail and a prison, correct?
Yes.
Now, a jail is where you're waiting until you actually get sentenced?
Well, the jail is where you're waiting to go to trial.
Okay.
Okay. In our jail, if you're sentenced up to 1 year, we can hold you for 1 year. And let you can get out from our jail. We also hold prisoners that are waiting, have been sentenced, and are waiting to go to the prison. And depending on the prisons and the spaces they have, it depends how many allocations they'll give us to send out. So we've held some prisoners for a good little while, from any place from around a couple of months to about 6 months, 7 months, waiting for a spot. And sometimes a guy will be waiting and another guy will leave earlier because he's more of a higher priority to get to the prison.
How is jail different from prison?
Well, when they go to prison, I've never been into a prison.
Okay.
I've never been into a prison. But a lot of the prisoners I've talked to say they prefer being in prison than in our jail.
Right. Okay.
So, say it's a lot laxer. They say they get better food, and they get to work there, whereas only a few people in our jail get to work.
The trustees.
Yeah, the trustees. There's only very few slots for them, and so the more people get to work when they get to prison.
Seems like work is something that everyone wants to some degree.
For the most part, yes.
Now, you always see on television, it's almost expected that if you're a rather youngish, good-looking kid, that you're going to end up getting raped in jail. I mean, how true is that?
Not very true, no. No, it can happen. I'm not going to say it doesn't. It can happen. I've had one instance in myself where some guy said that he was raped, and he said that I blew him off.
Right.
And he took, this was in, it all came about when the second time he brought it up, and I says, what? Because he never told me the first time. I tell you, he never told me the first time. So when he tells me this was like a month later, he tells me, and I don't know why he didn't tell somebody else, but he tells me, and I said, well, he says he needs to talk to me away from the other inmates. So I said, okay. So I pull him out, and he starts telling me. And I said, whoa, hold on. Let me take you over to the supervisor's office. So I took him over to the supervisor's office. Took him in there, three sergeants. He sits down, tells them the story. What I told the sergeant was there was a guy in there that was playing around with himself. And the sergeant asked him, were you raped? No. He says, no. He says, okay. And he starts, well, what's he doing and stuff? You know, he gets into it a little bit. Sergeant asked him two more times during the interview with the other two sergeants there if he was raped. He says, no. So he says, okay. He says, thank you very much. We'll investigate it. The person he said was causing the trouble, right? Because initially he didn't tell me he was raped. He told me that he was having some sexual activity.
Right.
So that's why I took him over to the sergeant's office. When next day, well, the sergeant went and he got the guys that he mentioned, he got them moved, separated, locked them down. And the next day when we come in, My sergeant calls me over. And he says, "You'll never guess." I says, "What?" He says, "Remember the guy from yesterday that said he wasn't raped?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "You remember me asking him the question if he was raped? I mean, he said the sexual activity?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "Do you remember me asking him if he was raped?" I said, "Yeah, several times." And he said, "No." I says, "That's right." And he says, "Well, guess what? He's in with the other shift sergeant saying that our sergeants ignored him when he said he was raped. And he had told us that he had been raped. Yeah. I mean, he told us he hadn't been raped."
It actually leads to another question that I would assume that most prisoners are professional liars. And how do you separate, you know, the lies from the truths?
It's hard to do. When an inmate is telling you something, if he lives with 23 other inmates, you separate him from them, and then you kind of pull out the inmates one at a time and talk to them separately, and you'll get an idea of along the lines where the truth is going to be. If it's set in stone and the inmates all back them up and there's not one discrepancy, it's usually probably going to be the truth. Because not all inmates, even though that inmate is saying something and he may have some influence in there, not everybody will back him up. So there will be a discrepancy. He may have some people that will back him up with his story if it's a lie, but not everybody will back him up.
Now, the correction officers, they're vastly outnumbered. How are you trained to handle being vastly outnumbered? You don't have a firearm. I imagine you have very little, if any, weaponry. How do you keep yourself safe? And what happens to when a situation comes if an inmate does attack a correction officer?
Well, usually they don't attack the correction officers. It's very rare.
They not do that because of the consequences, or what's the...
Yeah, most of them know the consequences. When they attack a correction officer, when it does happen, it's usually because the correction officer has a very rough demeanor with them. Maybe sometimes he goes overboard in his duties. And that can cause a lot of animosity with a certain prisoner maybe he doesn't like the prisoner or whatever. And I've seen some of that. And, yeah, sometimes they'll take a swing at an officer. Now, I've been involved in myself in a lot of scuffles, including with the gang members, and not one's laid a hand on me. I treat the inmates fair. I treat them all the same. And I treat them like they're human beings. And I feel in my 24 years I worked there that I got a lot of respect, because not one inmate, all the scuffles I got in, and it was usually between other inmates. It was all
separating
them. Yeah, I got involved a lot. And you treat them fairly, and you get that kind of respect. I mean, I could have gotten punched or could have got hit or whatever, but they realize I'm doing my job. I know one case with two gang members from the same gang, they went at it as they were cutting each other's hair, and they wouldn't stop fighting. And I called for my backup to arrive, but they were going at it pretty heavily. And I pulled up my pepper spray. Now, that's what I had available. And I walked up, and I said, "Break it up." And they were still going at it, fighting away. So I walked up halfway behind the guy that had his back to me, and I just put my pepper spray, reached around kind of in between them, and I sprayed each other in the face. And the still didn't stop them. It still didn't stop
that
them.
That pepper spray doesn't work so well.
Well, when you're very focused, you're in tunnel vision, and your mind is set on something, especially a fight, or if it's maybe even a mental inmate, it doesn't, they don't think about it until after their adrenaline's all wearing off.
Right.
But anyway, I managed to pull the one guy to the door and turn him around and kind of throw him out the door and hit the other guy in the chest and said, back off. And then that time backup showed up and told him to secure them. But either one of them could have hit me if they wanted to, but they never did.
What is, by the way, the penalty if an inmate hits a correctional officer?
They get a charge. They get another charge, assault charge.
Right, and that lengthens their time.
Well, it depends. It depends on the public. I'm not the public defender. The DA depends on him. He might just add the charge in there and say, okay, he's found guilty, and we're just going to add it with his time that he's already got, if he's already sentenced.
Right.
Or they can say, well, you know, he's facing this bigger crime, and we're just going to blow it off, or we maybe run it concurrent with his sentence when he does get sentenced.
There seems to be a rise. I'm 60 years old, and there were always gangs, you know, and I lived in Brooklyn. There were always gangs. But it seems like gang life has certainly enlarged itself. Is there a difference between the gangs that are running, let's say, the famous gangs of California versus New York, or are they the same gangs that just seed themselves all over the country?
Some of them are trying to spread out throughout the country. We in Texas, we've got we got gangs from California that moved in. I can't remember the name.
The Crips, the Bloods.
Yeah, we've got some them in the jail, and we've got the Barrio Aztecas, which is kind of in a Texas gang. It also runs over into Mexico, Juarez. They have the Barrio Aztecas as well, and they've been the federal government has come down on them quite a bit. And so they've been putting a lot of them away. They even killed one of our correction officers.
Really?
But he was in Mexico. He went to Mexico. His wife worked in the embassy over there. And they went for some kind of birthday party. As it turned out, I guess, the gangs thought that vehicle would belong to another gang or something like that. And they put the hit out on him, and they killed him and his wife, and their little baby survived. But that was one instance of where actually we lost somebody.
I'm sorry to hear that. And why do gangs exist, and why do they flourish? Why are they growing so out of control? Is it the fact that there's no parents? Is it what?
Well, excuse me. When I worked in the jail, a lot of the people, the guys that were in the gangs, they didn't have a stable home life. Their dads were criminals, or their dad, if they even had, their dad was even with them. Because usually a lot of them are brought up by their moms. And their mom works hard, I have to say that. They work hard to try and maintain for the family, usually requiring them to work two jobs or more to make a decent income, get a, you know, a decent life, try and make a decent life. Well, what suffers is the kid, because there's no adult supervision then, nobody taking care of him, so he gets to run the streets. And usually, if there's a gang, they'll try and scarf him up, and they'll take care of him. And they work him in with the gang. And that's how they get there. And then once they're into the system and have been convicted, they'll go to prison, they'll do their whatever time, and when they get out, we can say, okay, you know, do things to help rehabilitate them there in prison. But when they get out, where are they going to go? They're going to go back to their exact same place where they've been growing up, mm-hmm. the exact same friends, and they're going to get back into the exact same gang, most of them. As they get older, I've seen a few of them as they get older say, you know, I can't do this no more. I've got to go someplace else. And when they get out, they
ask to be on probation or parole to a different area.
Now, drugs is one of the main reasons that that's one of the major ways in which gangs get the money that they need to do whatever they have to do. Some states that are around you have legalized drugs or legalized marijuana. And one of my friends is kind of pretty high up in the federal corrections. And she told me that literally 95% of all the people that are in prison, somehow alcohol and marijuana are involved. Would you say that's over an exaggeration, or what is the role of alcohol and crime and getting high in crime? And what do you think about the states that have legalized pot?
I don't agree with that, my personal opinion. I don't agree with it. I think you start light, you work your way up, and that's just my personal opinion. And as far as the in the prison, Like I said, I've never worked in a prison. I know when we had, when I worked in the early 90s to around about 97, we had only the one jail, which was downtown, maximum security jail. And it was not a spread out building. It was a building that went up, okay. The high rise. Well, when you have prisoners, you've always got prisoners from all different. You have people in there with all different kinds of trades. At some point, somebody must have been into construction. They knew that there was holes in the building that had been filled with or plugged with cement when they're putting the cement buildings up. And it became wide knowledge, and they would find the plugs and use broom handles and hit them until they popped them out of the wall. They would usually hook up a little piece of metal or whatever they could get, pan or something like that, and they'd put on a string and they'd put it down like a fishing line all the way to the ground, and somebody would outside would coordinate, and somebody would come up with straws filled with marijuana or different drugs and pull them up into the jail. But since we built the new annex, it's just about non-existent.
Now, those two inmates that escaped the supermax federal prison, do you know anything about that?
No,
you missed that. Okay, so I have to ask that. I mean, I never understood how inmates could escape a supermax federal prison.
I'd like to know that myself. I would. And we had two prisoners escape one time. They worked in the kitchen, and this is on a weekend. The officers went to, as they process in, you know, give them bedding and uniforms and stuff like that. And they were running short on the weekend. So the laundry officer went to go get laundry trustees. Well, as it turned out, two kitchen trustees volunteered. Says, hey, they're tired, we'll take it. And so he took the two guys down to the laundry and sat there. And I have to say that maybe he kind of was tired himself and maybe kind of nodded off. I don't know. But they took the wringer handle off of the mop bucket and they beat him near to death with it. And at that time, when inmates were released, we kept what they called J.C. Penney clothes. That was discarded clothes that we kept in case somebody was missing a shirt or socks or shoes or something, you know, things like that. Well,
I'm sure J.C. Penney loves this commercial.
They were, that's what they called them at the time.
I'm kidding.
But they kept them down there in the laundry. They got the uniform, they got the civilian clothes on, and they went out to the doors and started pushing the door buttons. The central officer who's supposed to monitor who's coming in and going out, they were going out the same way the detectives go out, and come in. And I assume he must have been busy, and he saw them, thinking they were detectives. He let them out, and they escaped to Mexico. Interesting. And the Mexican authorities picked them up and sent them back. And so they were locked down for the longest period. They were only going to, if they had gotten convicted of their crimes that they initially came in from, they would have only did about 5 years, 7 years. And they got sentenced for like 30 years to life after that. And the one guy who I feel like he instigated the whole thing, because he was always a manipulator, talking and trying to connive, the inmates down in the prison where he ended up killing him. They threw him off the third level of the building and killed him. And the other inmate, who was very mild-mannered, very quiet, he had opted to go lockdown, spend his time in an individual cell. And so that's not very much of a life there either.
No, well, 30 years to life, I guess he got his life quick.
Yeah.
You know, now, Texas is one of the few remaining states, I think there are about six or seven, that have the death penalty. What is your stand on the death penalty? I will tell you mine first. I believe that the death penalty should be in place. I think that people who have absolutely premeditated the death, you know, of innocent people in the act of committing a crime, or for whatever reason, if you take a life premeditatively, I think that you're putting your life up, you know. But you tell me how you think.
Well, I'm kind of in the middle on this. I believe the death penalty should be, but on the other hand, when I look at it, I've been working in the jails. I've not worked in the prison, but I've been working in the jails. I wonder which is more.
Which is more terrible for the prisoner?
For the prisoner.
I don't care about the...
You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I do know what you're saying, but the cost of keeping a prisoner...
Is a lot.
So who are we punishing? Are we punishing the prisoner, or are we punishing the people who now have to face a rise in their taxes, and we're actually punishing the general public for their crime?
But there again is do you want to punish a prisoner, or do you just want to get rid of them?
Well, what do you guys do? You shoot them, or you?
No, they inject them.
Inject them.
Yeah.
Yeah, injecting them is doing both. You're getting rid of them, and you're punishing them.
Yeah, you put them to sleep. When you give them the injections, it puts them to sleep, and then you put the other medicine in, and it stops their heart. So they're not really, per se, feeling anything.
Okay, so they're not being punished?
So it's kind of like they're drifting off to sleep, and that's the end of their life. Now, shouldn't they be held accountable for that life that they killed, and shouldn't they be made miserable? And I say miserable. Shouldn't they think about what they did for the remainder of their life?
Well,
and as yeah.
The thing that I would say, and you tell me, because you actually have much more experience within the jails, it's said that almost every single person in the jail doesn't really think they should be there, and they have some excuse why they didn't do it. So I wonder how much they're feeling punished as opposed to just acclimating to whatever environment they're in.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. But sometimes...
Meaning the original concept of jail had an element of rehabilitation. Is that really just a myth?
No.
Like the unicorn? Or are they... Because I know in Northern Europe, in Norway and some of the Northern European prisoners, they really do rehabilitate.
Yeah.
But it's a small country and it's a different story. What kind of rehabilitation, if any, takes place in Texas jails?
Well, in the jails, the order offer them the GED. They have the instructors coming in to get them a GED, because a lot of them don't have high school diplomas, and they'll have them GED. If they, a lot of them are down in our area, they don't speak English, and so they offer them English as a second language so they can communicate. Now, within a jail is a limited amount of things they can do. And like I said before, they have trustees that work the kitchen. They can also earn a cooking, kind of not degree, but a cooking certificate that they're eligible. They know
for like short order cook,
short order cook stuff like that. But when they go to prison, they can end up getting their high school, their college, there in prison as well.
And you sound like a good recruiter for prison.
No, I'm saying these are things that will help them rehabilitate.
Why pay $100,000, $200,000? Just commit a crime and, you know, get decent food and get your high school.
But, these are things to help rehabilitate them.
Okay. So what you're saying, in prison they actually have the chance to get an education.
Yeah, yeah, to get an education and to better themselves so that when they do come out, they can apply that and stay away from whatever they were doing before. Now, whether they go back into the same old neighborhood and not use that education, it's all up to them, you know.
Right.
But at least the system offers them that, and if they do it, and they can get their degree even.
James, do you think the system is broken, or do you think it works?
This is
just Texas, I know.
I've seen a revolving door. A lot of them, and I said, like I said before, they do the crime, they do the time, and then they go back to the same neighborhood where the same gangs are, and they get all wrapped up in it again.
Well, what happens to the kid who doesn't want to join a gang? What happens to him?
They try and pressure him.
Yeah, define that. Sending him nasty letters?
Just hassling them, really hassling, bossing them around, kind of pushing them around a little bit. And usually they'll get a hold of the officer and say, hey, these guys, they're hassling me in here, and we'll end up moving them someplace else.
I guess what I'm asking is, from your knowledge, what happens to the kid who won't join a gang when he's in the streets, not in jail? Well, won't he be, in a sense, unprotected and therefore threatened, bullied, and beat up?
Well, I guess that can happen, but I think the gangs, if somebody's not willing to join, they'll hassle them for a while, but then they'll let them go if he can put up with it, a little hassling for a while, they'll put up with it, and then they'll stay away. You know, they'll say, hey, as long as he doesn't get involved in some other gang or something like that, you know. If he stays neutral, that's...
So wear a white shirt really maybe the best idea. Does it take a toll on you and the other correction officers being a correction officer? I mean, how does it affect your personal life? You know, do you find that correction officers get a little bit almost paranoid or guarded even when they're not working?
Yeah, that can happen, yeah.
I know correction officers have a higher rate of suicide than the general public, and why would that be?
Well, from my own perspective, when I was working at my annex, the supervisors kept me in the lockdown area all the time. I was the floor control officer. They put me in there, and it was always with 72 inmates that were locked down. You got six cell blocks, you got 12 locked down inmates in each one. And we had a mixture of the gang members, mental inmates, people that just didn't want to be with other inmates at all. And I can tell you, they don't all get along.
Right.
We had a lot of floods. A lot of stress. It created a lot of stress. A lot of TVs broken. When the inmate come out in his rotation, and he's got to do his cleanup, he would take the broom and break the TV. a lot of things would go on. So there was a lot of stress in that area. And a few years before I decided to retire, I was working out there, and my wife couldn't see that I was depressed when I came home because I was constantly working around. It got depressing, right, working around that constantly every day. And then I asked the supervisor, switch us up with the general population. He says, no, no. He says, we know you can handle it. You should take that as a
compliment.
Compliment that you can. We know you can handle the situation out there. I says, that's fine. But I says, after a while, it gets to you. I says, you need a break. Thanks for your opinion. And so I was started talking to my wife about retiring. It was actually a few years before I actually retired. And because I was depressed when I was home, I just wasn't right. And I says, let me see. I told my wife, I says, let me see. Maybe I can transfer downtown. Where downtown on the floors, they only have two or three lockdown cell blocks on each floor. The rest is all general population. So you don't have a whole stressful area. General population, for the most part, is pretty good. And luckily enough, I was able to transfer downtown, and I put in 2 more years there. And it was like when I got there and I was working downtown, even though I had 2 or 3 cell blocks and it could be gang members or whatever, but just the fact that I didn't have 72 inmates, it was all locked down, and mentals and everything else, it felt like a burden off my shoulders. And I could handle it for another 2 years. In fact, I'd have still probably been working if I hadn't had arthritis in the back.
Oh.
And it gets very stressful, and I don't think any of our officers have ever killed themselves. No. Well, I don't think any of ours did. But I know a lot of them were depressed, like myself, over having to do that, especially the floor control officers. They constantly picked on them to stay there, especially the good ones. They figured, they can handle the situation, and they don't give us a break.
And how about the first of all, why are mental patients in jail? Why aren't they in a mental hospital?
Because they did a crime. They have to be evaluated. Where do you put them until they're being evaluated?
I see. So they go to jail until they're evaluated.
Yes. They go through a mental evaluation. We had inmates come in, and we have to deal with them because that's where they have to go. They've committed a crime. So they go into jail, and the court will say, okay, we need this person to be evaluated, and we'll hold them for a while until there's an opening in usually the state mental hospital or something where they do the evaluations, and they send them off to get evaluated or treatment or whatever, and then they'll come back, and then they'll make a determination what to do with them from then.
Interesting. My last question is, as you see in a lot of these movies, that gang leaders, organized crime leaders who are in jail are still running their operations. How can they still run the operations, control their gangs behind bars?
Yeah, it can be done. They have a gang member, even a guy in charge, is not restricted from making phone calls, not restricted from writing letters. But they usually worked out a code, some kind of code. So they're sending a letter, and there may be a mark on the letter that indicates what code they're using. And they'll, whoever they send it to, could be to the sister or whatever, they know it goes to a certain person, and they will take it to them, and they use their little code. And our gang intel members have been pretty good at breaking their codes, because usually they'll find an ex-gang member, somebody that doesn't want to be in the gang, and they will kind of give up some information on how it all works.
Interesting. Thank you for a great interview, and thank you for your service both to the country and to your state of Texas. It is not an easy job. Which did you find harder, the military, the police, or the prisons?
Well, I was a medic in the Army. Yeah, I mean, the Army has its times, but I think the prison was the jail was the most trying.
Well, thank you for your service, and thank you for the interview. I want to once again thank James Nelson for coming onto our show. A lot of interesting stuff. I wish we had some more time. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, and remember, to every problem, there is a solution. So check out our other episodes on gluckradio.com and on our YouTube station by searching for Errol Gluck. Also, visit my website, glucksolutions.com. to learn how clinical hypnosis and executive life coaching will change your life forever. Thanks for listening. Till next time.